This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Tuesday, April 9th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, thousands of Mississippi children are abused and neglected in our state every year. The Attorney General's Office and Child Advocates are partnering to put a stop to abuse. Then March Madness is over, but many schools across the region got the chance to, compete in this year's NCAA basketball tournament. How getting a shot at the championship impacts smaller schools beyond the basketball court. Plus, will Mississippi lawmakers be able to reach a compromise on closing the state's health care gap by expanding Medicaid? Nearly 9,000 children were abused or neglected in Mississippi in 2023, according to the Mississippi Attorney General's Office. Children who are abused and neglected may suffer physical injuries such as cuts, bruises, or broken bones. They might also have emotional and psychological problems such as anxiety or post-traumatic stress. But experts say child abuse is 100% preventable. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. In Mississippi, the Attorney General's Office and Child Advocates are working together to increase awareness and stop abuse before it occurs. At an event in downtown Jackson yesterday, Attorney General Lynn Fitch and Carla Tai with the Children's Advocacy Centers of Mississippi spoke with our Mike McEwen about a partnership to raise awareness. Here's Attorney General Lynn Fitch.
Everybody in the state of Mississippi needs to understand we have children being abused. We have children being neglected. Everybody needs to be on the lookout. Everybody has a role to play to protect these children. And we need that information. We need the calls. We need the opportunity to help those children along the way. So that's why it's so important to have this information out there here across our state.
Could both of you, from your respective positions, talk about what this partnership will look like in practice and what's new about the approach?
Our partnership is not necessarily new, but we are strengthening our partnership, and we have bringing out a lot of public awareness during April because April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. So we are putting out PSAs, billboards. You're going to see articles and magazines across the state this month. Anything we can do to bring awareness to this important issue. But we work on a day-to-day basis with the Attorney General's Office and our Child Advocacy Centers on children that are walking through our door that are currently in the course of an investigation. Maybe that's through the cybercrime unit, working with their investigators, their attorneys. So we have an amazing partnership with the Attorney General's Office, and are really fortunate to have that type of relationship with this agency.
It's been significant as we partner together because there are so many children that have been abused, neglected, exploited. We see it every day. It takes our partnership to make a difference because we each have a significant role to play. And as we're working together, we're bringing justice for that child. We're getting that child into a foster home, to a forever home, or just making a difference that they now feel like they are valued and that they have a childhood ahead of them.
What are some specific things that could be done just to help make y'all's work easier and to help prevent child abuse, or at least prosecute it?
Well, the first thing is awareness. And there are so many individuals, the public just doesn't understand the magnitude of child abuse in our state. So we're trying to get that word out to help families understand, individuals understand that this is a real issue in our state and we have to tackle it. The second piece of that is then helping families know what to do. So when they're under stress, providing that training for families and professionals. So not just the families, but getting into our daycares, our churches, our schools, just so that they understand what to do if they suspect abuse, how to talk to a child about what they're concerned, what they may be seeing, what their child may disclose. And then from there, what do you do? How do you make a report? You know, we're working with our colleges and universities because there's so many professionals that come out of college and don't know what to do when a child may make a disclosure, but yet they're going to see thousands of children in their career. So we've been really working with our colleges and universities to make a change there and help proactively train our future workforce so that kids are protected. But it even goes beyond, you know, helping, working with our civic groups and our churches so that they can draft policies to help minimize opportunities for children to be abused. So it is just, it's ongoing work, and we are committed to defeating child abuse, but we're in this for the long game.
It is key for us as we work together, as those children come on board. Again, how do we protect them? How do we prosecute? So much of the information is together. Again, having the counselor, having the individual at the center talk to that child, having that tip, how do we move forward? Again, we are relying on each other every step of the way, because every part of our different roles add together for the well-being of the child.
What has the success been like for the Mama app? What has it been like?
The Mama app has been phenomenal. So we launched off the website in October and the app in January. We've had nearly 10,000 visits to the website and to the app. And so, again, helping these mothers-to-be, it's helping them have some ideas about, you know, where can I get a job? How can I get upskilled? But my child needs child care. Where do I go from there? Might need financial assistance. So we've been able to connect so many of these mothers and young mothers-to-be with the right assistance program. So it's been significant. And again, as you've wrapped the public sector, the private sector, and the faith-based communities, it's amazing. And we're always asking for different groups. If you want to be on the website, again, these are not new programs. We've just brought and bundled all of it together. So if you clicked on Hinds County, you can see all the different assistance programs here. And again, if you're that young mother and you now can click on and figure out where you need to be, who you can call, how do you connect, it is so valuable to her empowerment and to the well-being of the child.
That was Attorney General Lynn Fitch and Carla Tai with the Children's Advocacy Centers of Mississippi speaking with reporters. According to the latest data from the Centers for Disease Control, in 2020, more than 1,700 children died of abuse and neglect in the U.S. Coming up, March Madness is over, but many schools across the region got the chance to compete in this year's NCAA basketball tournament. How getting a shot at that championship impacts smaller schools beyond the basketball court. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Family Fun Day will be in the Pohl Gymnasium on the campus of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. MPB has partnered with the Mississippi School for Mathematics and Science, MUW, and the Preservation Society of Columbus to host the free event. Come and meet MPB's own Ed Said. The whole family can enjoy music, a health fair, games and activities related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Register at education.mpbonline.org.
MPB is bringing on the experts for our Tuesday local shows. Money Talks helps you with your personal finance at 9 a.m. In Legal Terms at 10 is about you and your rights. Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking, helps you navigate personal relationships at 11. Coming up next after Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio or find their podcasts.
An evening of jazz can be just what the doctor ordered. Join me, Meredith Michelle, with WJSU's Evening Jazz, 7 to 10 weeknights on MPB Music Radio.
I'm Scott Tong. Bernard McKinley decided to pursue a legal career when he was incarcerated and saw what inmates were subjected to.
The lack of ability for those individuals to, you know, even have a voice to defend themselves, it sparked a passion in myself.
McKinley goes to law school this fall, and he tells his story next time in Here and Now.
Today at noon on MPB Think Radio.
Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Last night, the Connecticut Huskies took home the title for the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. It was a close match. They scored 75 points over the Purdue Boilermakers, who scored 60. South Carolina won the championship, the women's championship, on Sunday. This year, 12 teams from the Gulf South made it to the big dance. The women's team at Jackson State and Ole Miss, along with Mississippi State's men's team. Smaller schools in the region were eliminated right away, but getting a shot at the championship can still make a huge difference beyond the basketball court. Here's Joseph King with the Gulf State's newsroom.
Punching a ticket into March Madness is a big deal for any school, but it's a different kind of special for schools that may not be well known.
The Grambling State Tigers dancing for the first time ever.
I don't think there's any such place as McNeese State either.
The Sanford men's basketball.
On the edge of Birmingham, Sanford University had a watch party at their student center on campus. J.D. Rowland is a freshman and says the student body has rallied behind the basketball team this year.
Even the energy right now and the atmosphere, it's electric. I mean, everybody's screaming at the top of their lungs. I mean, we're so pumped about our school. It's been 24 years since we've made it to the March Madness, and here we are.
Mostly known by its Baptist campus and liberal arts programs, the school has been making its presence felt in the athletic world. And when they found out they got a bid into the tournament, that feeling spiked.
We're all just cheering on our team, and all you hear everywhere is March Madness, who's going to win? Somebody put on their bracket, Joe Biden didn't put Samford to win, put Kansas, or all these people. It's insane.
Kennedy Russell is a junior at Samford. She was watching the game and doing homework. She says she's seen the growth of students interested in sports on campus.
There's not a whole lot of students coming to sporting events, so it's definitely like grown, and everybody's been really involved and really energized about us possibly getting to the second round, even though getting to the first round was something that was big enough. So
Samford ended up losing to Kansas, but likely gained some fans for almost coming away with the win. The school made it to the tournament for the first time in 20 years. Dr. Darren White says for small schools, this can translate to a lot. He's the executive director for sports analytics at Samford University.
We're already starting to see an increase in web traffic to our website. And then just the number of students are wanting to come visit campus, the number of deposits, i.e. the number of students that are wanting to go ahead and commit to coming in next year's class.
Samford's athletic director has said sports are the front porch that introduces people to the university. And White says by being on the national stage, people that probably never even heard of Samford before may know who they are now.
Most of the universities that you know something about, you really probably have never been there. You never visited the campus, but you know about them primarily through their sports programs. That's how you initially get introduced to the school.
Louisiana's McNeese State also made its first appearance in the tournament in 20 years. They lost in the first round as well. But the school's vice president, Dr. Wade Roos, says their season wasn't a Cinderella story. This was planned. They made headlines after hiring former LSU head coach Will Wade last year.
It was an intentional effort to invest in basketball. I had a wonderful year. Student bodies got really involved, sold it out towards the end of the season every game. Students were fired up, faculty's fired up, so just a really good time.
He says this basketball season led to an increase in numbers across the board and even saw the impact at their recent freshman orientation, where future students and their families scooped up thousands of dollars of school merchandise.
People buying the McNeese logo stuff. I certainly will notice it around town. There's a sense of pride.
Ruth says school officials have been getting interviewed left and right. He hopes that this national spotlight can lead to McNeese growing and believes the school has the capacity to make the tournament again next year, and says maybe the sports program can have a Saban effect for the school, similar to the University of Alabama.
I'm not naive enough to think that one shot can get that done, but if we can continue to capitalize on this, 2, 3, 4 years in a row, I absolutely believe you'll see a positive effect on enrollment.
Roos says McNeese is already onto the next phase, and likely all the schools that made the tournament will be trying to capitalize on this season to help boost the next one. For the Gulf State's newsroom, I'm Joseph King.
The Gulf States Newsroom is a partnership between Mississippi Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Alabama and Louisiana. Next, will Mississippi lawmakers be able to reach a compromise on closing the state's health care gap by expanding Medicaid? This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini-podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
At Mississippi Public Broadcasting, we tell local stories that matter. Educational and entertaining television, radio, news, and podcasts. We have something for everyone. So tune in and enjoy all we have to offer. Every day, MPB. Your stories, our mission.
MPB is bringing on the experts for our Tuesday local shows. Money Talks helps you with your personal finance at 9 a.m. In Legal Terms at 10 is about you and your rights. Southern Remedy, relatively speaking, helps you navigate personal relationships at 11. Coming up next after Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio or find their podcasts.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Family Fun Day will be in the Pohl Gymnasium on the campus of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. MPB has partnered with the Mississippi School for Mathematics and Science, MUW, and the Preservation Society of Columbus to host the free event. Come and meet MPB's own Ed Said. The whole family can enjoy music, a health fair, games and activities related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Register at education.mpbonline.org.
This is MPB Think Radio. Mississippi is our mission.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Mississippi has the highest rate of preventable deaths in the U.S. The state's health officer says Mississippi ranks at the bottom of virtually every health care indicator and at the top of every health disparity. Supporters of Medicaid expansion believe a policy change could improve those rates. Yet lawmakers in the House and Senate differ greatly on plans for expanding the health care program. The Senate Medicaid proposal would ensure fewer people and bring less federal money to the state than the version approved by the House. The House plan would expand Medicaid benefits to hundreds of thousands more residents, up to 138% of the federal poverty level. The Senate plan expands up to 99% of the federal poverty level. Lawmakers will soon begin the conference process where they try to reach a compromise. How will that go? For Medicaid expansion, a coalition of groups called Care for Mississippi issued a statement last week calling on lawmakers to fully close the state's health care gap and save hospitals. Blair Ewing is a project coordinator with the group. She spoke with our Will Stribling about their efforts.
If we go below 138% of expansion, we wouldn't be getting those crucial federal dollars that we need to implement a lot of this stuff. So a lot of the costs that would go, if we don't fully expand, it would go into administrative costs. So not only would we be losing out on this great deal, but we'd be providing less care to less people. We'd be losing out on millions of dollars.
In that statement, y'all also said, you know, in the midst of our rural hospital crisis, the price of inaction means more closures and more hardship for communities across the state. While on the Senate side, Chairman Blackwell and Lieutenant Governor Hoseman have argued that, yes, while there is a percentage of the population under expansion that would be getting health coverage for the first time, a consequence of full expansion would be that a number of people, you know, thousands and thousands of people that are currently on the federal exchange would be moved to Medicaid. And their argument is that it's wrong to take those folks that are paying already and have skin in the game and give them completely subsidized health care and that moving those people from private insurance to Medicaid would be bad for hospitals because of Medicaid's lower reimbursement rates when compared to private insurance. So would y'all just address that point and those concerns?
It's a three-part question. It's pretty much a very straightforward answer. So the first part that I do want to hone in on is that the way that they're talking about kicking people off their private insurance, it's just, it's a misnomer. They're not saying it correctly. And I hate to say that they're saying it wrong. It's just a misconception. So what happens is that you reclassify these people. The whole point of expansion is that you're reclassifying a class of person based on income. So those people would be coming under the bracket of Medicaid. And the thing about that is that these currently are people in the marketplace. Yes, they say that their healthcare is already subsidized. But realistically, what we have been trying to say is that these people can't afford the marketplace, and that's why there is a coverage gap. For example, Blair has some numbers in front of her about people in the 100 to 138% of income. So if an individual bought the second lowest cost in the marketplace, the silver plan, the benchmark, what it would be is they would be charged in a year out of pocket for that plan, $3,150 for an individual, $6,300 for a family. Most people wouldn't hit those limits, but they would face a deductible of roughly $90 before the plan would cover most services. And then the last part, we go into the hospitals. Because of the severe problem of medical debt in this state, in fact, Mississippi is a state with the highest medical debt in the nation, people cannot pay these medical bills. So they're working under the assumption that these people are able to pay these medical bills. They aren't. And that's why these hospitals are closing. Instead, you would be having people on these Medicaid plans, and that is a guaranteed payment to the hospital. And yes, it is a lower cost, but it's better than the hospital literally just closing because people cannot pay their medical bills.
Y'all also urged lawmakers to study the outcomes from efforts in North Carolina and Georgia. Can you talk a bit about what has come of the efforts in those states and the lessons they should teach us?
We were trying to understand what was going on in Georgia because so many people were looking to Georgia here in Mississippi to create a similar plan. What we found in our research and in their recounting of their experience is that with partial expansion, they're still facing a nightmare of administrative costs and administrative backlogs to the point where 90% of their budget for this healthcare plan that they had solely went to administrative costs. So they ended up covering a small percentage of the people that they were even supposed to cover. So we want to avoid a similar state for Mississippi. We just don't think it's necessary to spend all millions of dollars of Mississippians' hard-earned money into a plan that won't work.
Yeah, talk about what it's been like for y'all seeing this issue move through the legislature like it has this session and see substantive debate take place when for over a decade that has just not been allowed to occur at the Capitol.
The people that we work with that have been working on this for over a decade are just so over the moon that this is actually at the table and we're having an actual conversation about what closing the coverage gap would look like in Mississippi. And the fact that there's legislation on the table and we're having a good faith discussion about it on both sides of the legislature is amazing. So it's historic.
That's Blair Ewing with Sylvia Nicole Checkey from Care for Mississippi. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.